Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta.
Life was really good and normal, even though there was this big, scary shadow following us around everywhere. And then the shadow caught up with us.
Hello.
The brain tumor kept growing back.
This is Aaron.
I miscarried our second baby.
Love you guys.
My dad died.
Talk to you soon.
And a few weeks later.
Bye-bye.
So did Aaron.
That's a clip from Nora McInerney's APM podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking. She launched the podcast after becoming a quote-unquote reluctant expert on grief. Nora writes about her losses and moving on with her life in a memoir called No Happy Endings.
Honestly, getting through anything, and I think I am still in the process of going through all of those things, mm-hmm. is part shock, it's part necessity. Mm-hmm. The world does not stop spinning just because yours did. The world at large just keeps moving.
Yeah.
And I think that's something to remember when you are kind of an okay place in your life, that you're walking through this world where you encounter so many people every day and you really have no idea what their world is like, even though you're on the same planet.
Yeah.
I'd walk through Target like, how are all these people just here shopping? And yeah, I was shopping too because I still needed things. But I was like, they don't know. How do they not know? It's just a really very, very surreal experience. I think all suffering, all tragedies is just very, very surreal in that way.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's very well said. Before your husband, Aaron, passed, you collaborated with him on his obituary, and the obituary went viral. Can you tell me a little bit about what Aaron's obituary said?
The thing about an obituary, there's two things that I like to tell people about obituaries. One is that it is so strange to me that we wait until after somebody we love has died to try to summarize their life, also without them. And I'd written my dad's obituary, and Aaron had watched me sort of struggle with that after my father had died. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're like, is this the most important thing about them? Mm. Am I properly summing this up? And I really did not want to be the last word on Aaron. He was so unique. He was so, so funny. And it made sense for him to really have a say in what that obituary said. And he was so funny. So the night that he entered hospice, he and I sat down in our bedroom and I typed and he talked and we wrote his obituary, and it started with a joke. We would, it's so strange, but we would often, when we were like sort of fake irritated with one another, pretend to be reading each other's obituary. Does that make sense? So Aaron would be in the kitchen and you'd be like, Nora McInerney died, age 35, mysterious causes. Her husband noted, why didn't she shut the cabinet doors? Like, I just, you know, why shut a cabinet door? You're going to need to get in there eventually, but that's not here. So I had, we were just going back and forth like that. And Aaron said, you know, died due to complications from a radioactive spider bite. And we just went from there. And he was a huge, huge Spider-Man fan, a huge Marvel fan.
Yeah.
And so we wrote it as if Spider-Man had died and we were revealing his identity. And, you know, we sprinkled in some facts. I can't comment on whether or not he was first married to Gwen Stefani, but that's a point in the obituary.
Okay.
And regardless of how factually true or not the obituary was, it was so true to who he was. And it was so perfect. And it was really just meant as a little wink to all the people he loved.
Yeah.
Like kind of a final laugh from him when they saw it in the paper. But it went far, far beyond the Minneapolis newspaper. And it did go viral, which was a very strange experience to open up the internet or turn on the TV and see your husband's face.
Yeah, how did that make you feel? Did it, when it went viral and all these, you know, all these strangers were aware of your husband's passing and you know, tangentially aware of what you were going through, how did that affect you emotionally?
I think that it was sort of, it was comforting in a way.
Yeah.
Grief feels so lonely and it feels so, so personal. Even if you're, you know, surrounded by friends and family, it is something that you carry alone, but, and that you're sure is not affecting anybody the way that it's affecting you. And no, these people did not miss Aaron the way that I did, but it was very sweet. It was very sweet. And it also just reminded me of who Aaron was, which he did make people, anybody he met, just feel like they were a part of something always made everybody feel like they were in on the joke.
Right. You've released another memoir called No Happy Endings. What inspired you to write it?
So about a year after Aaron died, I met a man and we started the process of falling in love, and I got pregnant and we got married in that order. And I found myself really struggling with the knowledge that I was happy and that it felt in direct conflict with my grief. I had not had the experience of being in love with two people at the same time before. And I don't know how many people have who aren't widowed, but the prevailing attitude towards love is that you love a person, right? Like, and then maybe you break up or you get a divorce, and then you take all of that love and you pour it into a new person, and the old love has sort of evaporated. And that's kind of how I assumed love worked. And I felt myself in a situation that was completely the opposite, where I still love Aaron so much and I love Matthew now. And a part of me was afraid that I was afraid to be happy. And I was also afraid that it meant that somehow this new relationship discounted what I had with Aaron and what I still feel for Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And even more than that, I was afraid that other people would think that Aaron was over for me.
Yeah.
And there's a few reasons for that. The way that we talk about grief, you know, we use a lot of common phrases, things like, oh, closure. Things like, well, you're moving on. And, you know, things like, oh, there's a happy ending. There's a silver lining to this.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, Matthew is not the ending of Aaron. Matthew and our family as it exists now is a new beginning, but it lives concurrently with the family that I started with Aaron.
Yeah.
And my love for Matthew and my love for Aaron, they aren't at odds with one another, and one does not detract from the other. So I know that other people struggle with this, and not just people who are widowed, but people who have gone through all kinds of things, this tension between what they think they should be feeling and what they are feeling, and this tension between feelings that seem to be complete opposites somehow occupying their heart and their head at the same time. So this is the book that came out of that.
Yeah. How did you meet Matthew?
I met Matthew through my friend Mo. Mo is also a widow, and I was definitely looking to leave Minneapolis. Just felt very haunted for me. It felt very difficult to live here. And Mo was trying to trap me, and she invited me over to her house one evening and said, I was very stressed out, and she was like, just come over. We'll burn stuff in the backyard. I love burning stuff, so you don't have to ask me twice. Showed up with like a bag of old medical bills, like, yes, light them up. And we sat in the backyard with our friend Kevin for a while, and then all of a sudden this other guy shows up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell? God, now I have to pretend to care about, you know, another person. I've got to remember a new name. And this man, you know, came and sat down, and Mo has these chairs, those plastic Adirondack chairs, you know, that you can get Fleet Farm.
Yeah, with the fake wood grain, the faux wood grain.
Fake
in them. Yeah.
Wood grain.
Yeah.
I would say they are structurally unsound often, and these ones had been very close to a fire for a while, and this man sat down and the chair completely buckled.
Oh, dear.
And threw him back, and all I saw were his feet flying through the air, and then this arc of wine following his feet, illuminated by the fire. And I laughed so hard. And I hadn't laughed in so long that I thought that I was going to be sick or pull a muscle. I couldn't breathe. I was pointing and laughing, which is a great combination. Very, very kind. And he got up, went inside, cleaned himself up, came back out, and reintroduced himself. And I still couldn't look at him without laughing. I spent an entire night laughing in his face. And then I realized he was cute.
Yeah.
And I thought, you should ask me out. And so I told him to. And he did not pick up that not subtle hint at all. He was like, maybe I will someday. I was like, no, ask me out now, you dummy. And the rest is, that's where we went from there.
Yeah. So fast forward a bit, and you become pregnant with Matthew's child. Can you tell me about that?
I did get pregnant pretty quickly. I'd finished the edits on my first book. It was about to come out, and I took a pregnancy test. Oh, maybe a month before I went out on my book tour, and I just thought, oh my God, I'm pregnant. And then I thought, oh God, I'm pregnant. And I truly thought, like, I'm going to stand up there with this record of my love for Aaron, and people are going to see that pregnancy and think, yeah, right. Well, can't be too sad.
No. And to add something else, then your due date for this pregnancy, coincided with another due date. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So we end up doing the math. We figure out when my due date is. It's in November. November is when Aaron died. Mm-hmm. November is when I met Matthew. And November is when the podcast that I was working on with American Public Media was supposed to come out.
Wow.
And as we got closer and closer, I realized these dates are basically the same.
Your podcast is called Terrible, Thanks for Asking. That's a great title. Why did you choose it?
Thank you. It was a rejected title for my first book.
Oh, so really? Oh.
I love when people compliment it because HarperCollins said, huh, seems a little negative for a book about your husband dying. I was like, really? I think it's a great title, but it was rejected. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to take that title and make it into a podcast. So maybe it's not a crystal ball exactly, but I realized I could find out a little bit about my son's future by talking to somebody who shares a similar past.
I am Ambra Marcos.
Ambra and I went to grade school together, and she stood out because she was beautiful and elegant. She was a ballerina, and she was the only girl in school whose mother was dead.
Can you tell me a bit about the podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking, and what you're achieving with it, what you're aiming to achieve?
Yeah, we are just making it possible for people to answer honestly the question that we ask each other more often than any other, right? Mm-hmm. How are you?
Yeah.
How are you? What do you say when someone asks you that? I'm fine.
Right.
Things are good.
I'm fine. I'm okay. Yeah.
I'm great.
Yeah.
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 I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. I mean, my life is falling apart. I'm pretty sure I'm teetering on a nervous breakdown. Yeah. Can't complain. Things are good.
Yeah.
And there is, like, there's boundaries are there for a reason. There's a reason why we don't and shouldn't dump all of our emotional problems on the cashier at the grocery store. But when we give everybody in our life the same answer, it makes it really, really hard for people to be there for us.
Yeah.
And it really creates this sort of prison of loneliness. And I experienced that. I mean, people asked me all the time, and I mean, I would say, I'm good. You know, I'm writing a book. Oh, I'm good. I'm starting a podcast. And that is a hard habit to break, is basically trying to convince everybody else that you are fine and really like self-isolating in that way. So we talk to regular everyday people about a thing that they've gone through or are going through. And we tell their story with empathy, but without pity. And we just give them the space to be. And what I want to do is just make a thing. I want to make episodes. I want to make a show where people can point to the thing we've made and say, like, it felt like this. Mm-hmm. I didn't go through this exact thing, but it feels like this. Listen to this.
Yeah, something everyone can relate to. Yeah.
Right.
I think you're doing that. Yeah. How has having these difficult conversations changed your life?
I mean, I was always having these conversations is the thing. I just now have a job, which is nice.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this podcast came out of the fact that people were sending me these messages all the time and you know, seeing me in the grocery store and being like, oh, my God, I have to tell you this thing. I'm like, great. I have a two-year-old in the cart right now, so we're going to need to make it quick.
Yeah. Give me the Cliff Notes version. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually think it's at least now I feel helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's made me feel useful in this world.
Nora McInerney is the author of No Happy Endings and the host of the APM podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking. You can find out more about Nora on our website, wpr.org/beta.
Today, you know, Kanye and Paul McCartney and, I mean, everybody collaborates. There's nobody who doesn't collaborate. But before Walk This Way, there was no such thing.
Up next, journalist Jeff Edgers joins us to talk about how Run-DMC and Aerosmith's 1986 mashup Walk This Way changed music forever. I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.